Johnson.
Stevie Johnson's going to find him all the way up to the line. Who'll get there first? Kelly, I reckon. No, Johnson got him.
Three laps to go.
The driver's seat.
It's redemption day for Daniel Ricciardo. He wins the Monaco Grand Prix.
The driver's seat with Matt McKeldin and Stephen Johnson for Kubota. Together, we are building Australia.
Yeah, that's kind of what we're all really left with at the moment.
Yeah, that's it. I want to make sure that in the opener, the new opener that we're going to do, I want to hear Mark Scaife calling an e-race. He's in the fence. He's over the car park.
In the fence.
He's onto the road. He's driving down the road. All that sort of stuff. But yeah, it is esports. That's in many ways, we are really fortunate, boys, that our sport lends itself to millions of people around the world sitting down on a nightly basis, clicking on and having a race. And all of our all the major sports are doing it. All the major motorsports are doing it. Because you can't do it with soccer. You can't do it with Olympics.
No.
You can't do it with rugby. No. But you can do it with racing.
You got a touch of the... Speaking of Mark Scaife, you got a touch of the Mark Scaife tuts while you're sucking on that lollipop in your mouth, mate. I can give you the tip.
But look, in case
I may have coronavirus, don't make me walk the 2.5 meters to the other side of the studio and sneeze on you.
Go away.
But in case you have missed the announcement, the full Virgin Australian Supercars Championship field will contest the inaugural Supercars All-Star E-Series. That starts April 8th. Now, this is it's actually the full field, so we're going to see all three Matt Stone Racing drivers on the grid. There's not going to be a super light program sharing a virtual car there.
It's going to be the biggest supercar field in years.
It actually is.
But I was waiting for you to have a go.
But what's going to happen is it runs for 10 rounds. All drivers will be racing remotely from home, since pretty much that's where we're all stuck. The first two races were at Phillip Island, virtually, obviously, and another one in Monza. How about that?
That'll be slow, Monza, won't it?
Yeah.
Not. It's going to be really interesting because I was never a supercar driver. Stevie, you are a supercar driver. Do you think it's just going to be a send fest? They're just going to put each other in the wall for a gag and a giggle?
Do
you reckon they're going to be super competitive because they're competitive athletes? Anyway, do you think they're going to be competitive, or are they just going to have fun?
They'll be competitive. I mean, if they're not in contention for the win, I think you're going to see a bit of
silly
buggers going on. But as this is all going to be broadcast by Fox Sports, it's going to be commentated properly. It's going to be like driver standards advised properly. Like, I don't know if Craig Baird's doing it or not, but that sort of thing.
Yeah, right.
It's a serious thing, and they're trying to make it serious so that when the public and the fans and the sponsors do watch it, it's not, you don't want it to be just a cluster like you're in the middle of, some sort of demolition derby at Archerfield, which I've been in the middle of. you want it to be, and you want to see some good hard racing and some biffing and pushing and, eight cars coming to the last corner all dive bombing each other. That's what we want to see. It'd be cool fun.
And I think there's a thirst for it because if you look on what Formula One and NASCAR did and all that kind of stuff, they're all running series and they're being well watched. Like the numbers on the NASCAR thing, Nimsy, I'm not an e-racing guy, right? Because I'm an old bloke, but I was shocked. I think they had an average of
903,000, so just shy of a million
on TV watching it. And then they had 140,000 fans watching via a streaming online service.
Via Twitch and Facebook and all that sort of stuff. But
170,000 people watching the virtual Bahrain Grand Prix on YouTube. Mm. I mean, it's an extraordinary thing, clearly. And
I'd like you to pronounce the Formula 2 driver's name that won that too.
Let's have a look. Was he a Chinese driver?
No.
Guan Yu Zhao. Guan Yu Zhao won the virtual Bahrain Grand Prix. Thank you, Stephen Johnson. But not only
and,
Formula
and
One.
And once he got onto the podium, he wasn't allowed to take his balaclava off.
No bat celebrations that evening in a restaurant somewhere.
You know, you talk about that NASCAR number, though. Yeah. The thing that made it even more appealing was the fact you had some old-school names join the fray as well. So, yeah, Denny Hamlin won the Dixie Vodka 150, which I love the fact that it's still got its sponsor.
They got a sponsor. How good is
which
that?
Which is fantastic. And that was at the Homestead Miami Speedway. But he had pretty much a door-to-door, because I was watching the highlights of this, and it was actually really cool to see Denny Hamlin and Dale Earnhardt Jr. door-to-door trying to fight for the finish. They were taking it so seriously, these guys.
How good.
Yeah. That's cool, isn't it?
Do you reckon, has Supercars asked Dick Johnson to come out of retirement and have a crack?
Oh,
and
mate.
How would Dick go on the simulator, do you reckon?
He'd get in, he'd pop his hip out, and he wouldn't be able to push anything. Then he'd be going, where's the control alt delete? No good.
Okay. But not just Formula One, not just Supercar, TCR Australia through ARG. They're going to be having an e-sport cup.
By car sales.
By car sales. Starting on Thursday, April the 2nd, at which my esteemed co-host is going to be getting back behind the wheel.
Yes.
And competing in the E-Series, the E-Sport Cup by ARG.
Yeah, yeah.
Which will be in a multiple of cars. Not just TCR cars, but S5000 cars and all.
Which I think it's going to be Formula Renault, which is a very comparable thing to the S5000. So,
and are they going to have a Trans Am? They're going to have a NASCAR for Trans Am, something like that?
Yep. So I think it's going to be really cool. I think it's going to be something different. And, you know, it's really cool to be a part of it. They're going to do liveries up from everyone's car. So my car will have an XD livery on it, you know, from the TCM side of things.
That'll
and
be cool.
So just, it's, I think it's going to be really well, I guess, pushed by ARG, but then I think it's, the reception's going to be great by not only the online racing fans, but just the fans in general to see something different. And the one thing that I love about it is that, you know, I haven't done a hell of a lot of sim racing. I've done a little bit. Yeah. But my young fella Jet, he's in there all the time racing. So ARG want Jet and myself to alternate. So it'll be cool. So
it's
one week it'll be myself.
Program.
It's ARG's Superlight program.
And that's
for
the first time in
E-Series.
History that a Johnson's been called Superlight.
Yes, exactly right. Go away, mate. Go and suck on your lollipop. And but it's going to be, I think it's going to be cool. Like to have Jet in there, he's really excited to be able to race against some of the guys. You know, he'll be racing against probably Garth Tander and Will Brown and all these guys. So it's going to
Imagine
be really
if he
cool.
Beats him. How good. If he beats him on spec, that's going to be good for him. That's going to be people will love seeing Jet Johnson toweling up Garth Tander and whoever might be.
And you and I will be sitting in that media room of mine with
absolutely.
A beverage in each hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And if it's the last lap.
Yep.
With half a lap to go, and and Jet Johnson's behind Garth Tander. Oh, you know what? You and I will be saying, get him out of there, mate.
Absolutely.
Send him. Sorry, GT, I like you, mate, but you know.
Absolutely. And of course, if we are sitting on that couch, it'll be a meter and a half apart from each other.
Yes, 100%.
As is the style these days.
As we are in the studio right now, I'm finding myself yelling because he's so far away, but then I forget we're on a microphone with headphones.
And you forget that he barely listens as well. But
true. Whenever I talk, he checks his phone.
No, but look, what is great to see, and this is the advantage that, you know, motorsport has that, as you said, the ball sports don't, that we can still have our competitive athletes out there and in a capacity to, and it might even see a chance to, you know, this is going to be one of the few times you're going to see Jamie Whincup probably at the back of the pack, or and maybe someone like an Anton Di Pasquale up the front, you know, and really dominating a couple of laps ahead. So this is really going to shake things up, and it's a great initiative. And I'm just sure all the networks, KO, Fox Sports, are just going, yes, just give us something to put on right now.
I cannot imagine.
This is unprecedented,
like,
isn't it?
In the content corridors of Fox Sports, and in fact, in some of the radio stations, it would be A never-ending conversation, you know, and I think we're in a very lucky position with motorsport that we can do this, we can report on it, we can have a laugh about it, our fans can watch it, we can still have fun with Formula One. I saw Lando Norris and his Twitch account having a laugh with Max Verstappen about what they were going to do the other day. So the entertainment side of it, during this hiatus, we're going to see some real human being stuff rather than just athlete, robot, race car drivers. We're actually going to see some behind the scenes stuff, and I think that's going to be fantastic. And you know, you're going to be able to watch the behind the scenes of Erebus Motorsport on Fox Sports and KO. That's coming up in the next week or so as well. So, you know, we'll just make do, lads, and we'll have a bit of fun doing it. You won't see me behind the wheel of a simulator, but it will be good to see the Johnsons and the Tandas and the Wind Cups and SVGs. And I think you said it right. Anton De Pasquale, I reckon he's going to be a gun. He will be one to watch in the new championship, I reckon.
Him and SVG, I reckon, are going to go head-to-head.
SVG will be a ripper.
This is going to be good to battle with the boys and you know, see who spends way too much time in their living room when they're not at the racetrack.
Well, both the car sales ARG eSport Cup will be starting on Thursday, April the 2nd, and the Virgin Australia Supercars All-Stars E-Series, that's a mouthful, starts on April 8th, and it's going to be really interesting to see. And there's even talk that we might even see a Supercars versus the World event, and maybe we'll see a couple of NASCAR/F1 drivers get involved
cool.
too. So there's plenty of racing. Even if it's not on track, we can at least sort of see it in a virtual form. But you are listening to The Driver's Seat. We do it thanks to Kubota. Together, we're building Australia.
This is The Driver's Seat for Kubota. Together, we are building Australia.
Welcome back to The Driver's Seat. We do it thanks to Kubota. For over 40 years, we've been making tomorrow matter. And together, we're building Australia. Right now, it's time for our feature interview for IMAR Insurance. The tradies, mate. Call 13-IMAR.
Let's get this party started. A brand new decade of supercar action begins right here in Adelaide.
You can hear the applause in the background. He lines it up out of the final corner. Jamie Winkler adds to an already impressive library and catalogue of victories in Adelaide.
Adelaide, are you ready? Your race one winner for 2020 from the Red Bull Holden Racing team is Jamie Winkler.
He's arguably the greatest of all time, and he's got the stats to back it up. 497 starts, 119 wins, the most of any driver, 239 podiums and 80 Armorall pole positions. Plus, he's a record 7-time Supercars Championship, including 4 in a row from 2011 to 2014. Please welcome back to the driver's seat, Jamie Winkup.
How you going?
Going all right, Jamie, and I'll tell you what, mate. First off, welcome to the driver's seat again for 2020, and congratulations on approaching 500 starts. A bit of a disappointment that we didn't get to tick off that milestone, but still a fantastic achievement, and you must be very, very chuffed.
Yeah, for sure, for sure. Yeah, it was somewhat disappointing. Yeah, I was all amped up for my 500th race at the Grand Prix. We did do two practices and two quality runs. And I qualified on pole for my 500th race, but then went in there the next day, and then she was all called off. So, it'll come. It'll come. The supercars have just announced this morning, which you may know, that we've followed pretty much international sport across the world, and we'll be delaying things for a few months. Hopefully, as far as nicks off in the next few months, and we can get racing again come the middle of the year.
Yeah, we echo that that disappointment, but at the same time, it is a global thing. It's not just supercars, and all the teams and supercars have done a great job to reschedule, mate. But like I said, the stats don't lie. You're going to become just the 8th driver in the 60-year history of the championship to reach that milestone. But for some reason, retirement, your post-race career, always seems to be the biggest talking point at the start of each year. But there was some very good news before the Superloop Adelaide 500. You've put pen to paper. You're going to be with Triple Eight and in that Red Bull Holden until at least the end of 2021. Now, when you sat down with RD, did it go very smoothly? Does he have a plan post-2021? Or did he go to you, you're up the front, do you want to keep racing? Do you enjoy it still? What happened?
Yeah, so the older you get, you do have to ask yourself the question at the end of the year: Can I put in 10% more than the previous year to maintain my performance for the following? So I asked myself the question over the break, and the answer was yes. You know, I can't really think of a life without racing or traveling all over the country, racing cars. So decided I'd go on for 2021. RD sort of he gave me the option. You know, he knows I'm sensible enough to recognise not just myself, but he knows that I want to make sure that the best person's in driving car 88. And while at the moment I believe I'm the best person to drive that car, one day that'll certainly change. But for 2021, happy to be signed up again. And yeah, we just want to get out there and go racing. We started the year well. Adelaide is fantastic. We had a second and a pole at the Grand Prix before we all got put on hold. But so far, so good in 2020.
You talk about being the fastest guy in car 88. At the moment, the only one that seems to be matching your speed very consistently is the bloke in the garage next to you in car 97. You and Shane are obviously going to be at the same team until the end of 21. How good is that to have, first off, that level of consistency, and secondly, a teammate that continually keeps pushing? Because if Shane could get any faster, we'd be breaking the speed of light, I reckon.
Yeah. Well, it's a good partnership because, one, you know, there's that cliche thing in motorsport, the first person you've got to beat is your teammate. And while that's true, we work together incredibly well. You know, I'd like to think we're a bit above the old, all we've got to do is beat the teammate. We really, after every session, we come together and if anyone's found a gain somewhere in a line or a setup or another gear or something, we share it with each other and we really understand if we work together we'll be fighting for one and two in the championship as opposed to working against each other and fighting for fifth and sixth. So the partnership's worked really well. We've been working together now. I think Shane joined in 2016. So it's been a few years now. Just really enjoy the partnership. And the most important thing is we push each other to make each other better.
One of the other very important partnerships, obviously, in your team is, of course, you with Craig Lowndes. You'll be teaming back together. We've got the Enduro Dream Team back again, too, with GT jumping in with SVG as well. But a bit of a change this year, as it was last year, but you'll have a bit of a warm-up at Bathurst. The Bend as a 500-kilometre race, you and Lowndes in there, you can't get two better steerers behind that car, but that track, people still haven't sort of figured out the ins and outs of it and just the minor quirks, have they?
It's our first new circuit for over 15 years, so we're very, very thankful to have a brand-new, state-of-the-art, $120 million facility get built here in Australia, and it's fantastic for South Australians and anyone in Adelaide. It's only a short hour drive out to Tail and Bend, and it's one of the best racetracks you'll go to. So I've really enjoyed the circuit. I've worked with the Shaheen brothers and helped them where they can promote the track and what a great place it is. We've had some success here in the past, which has been great. But as you say, it was a little weird last year. I like change, but it was a little weird the first enduro race being Bathurst. While it's okay for the likes of, say, Lowndes and myself, for anyone that was new to the season of endurance or new to the sport, it was probably a little bit of a steep learning curve going straight to Bathurst for the first time. So this year, if it all goes well and we're back racing in June and the economy hasn't taken too much of a hit, it'd be great to be able to do the 500 at Tail and Bend before we go to Bathurst.
In a way, it sort of makes it a little bit easier too, in the sense that everyone's on an even playing field. I mean, we've only had supercars races there for the past 3 years or 2 years. My math's very horrible, so we could see some very, very exciting racing. But heading back to this year's season, your victory Saturday at the Superloop Adelaide 500. Now, I was there. Obviously, some very bad news with the demise of Holden came out earlier in the week in the lead up to the Superloop Adelaide 500. Yeah. And there were a lot of passionate fans that, wear red with pride, and even fans that wear blue that were just absolutely heartbroken. You, first off, getting the pole and then getting the first race win really, really lifted the spirits. You could tell that the day sort of changed and the event sort of became, oh, hang on, we're here to enjoy a bit of car racing and some fun. This game is fun. Now, what did that mean to you to take the first win of 2020, especially in light of the horrible news about Holden?
Yeah, as you say, it was twofold. I find it really important to win the first race of the decade. That's always nice. But yeah, it was just unbelievable news that come through that Holden, you know, Holdens are as Aussie as pies and bloody kangaroos. Like the history of Holdens in motorsport is as long as anyone I know. And for such an icon, like an absolute powerhouse, say 20 years ago, for them to say we're all over at the end of this year, it was all a bit of a shock, you know. Even some of like the greats of like Mark Scaife, he had a bit of a tear in his eye. It's an emotional thing. We've been attached to this brand for so long, and not just us, the dealers and any salesperson that they don't just go to work and sell a car. They're actually really passionate and stand by the Holden brand. So it's going to take a little bit to get used to, but yeah, what could I do? What could I do in the grand scheme of things? Go out and win the first race, you know, after the announcement. So that was a proud moment.
It really did sort of lift the spirits of a lot of Holden fans that really had the pinprick and the balloon there. But before I let you go, Jamie, one more thing I do want to ask. It's been quite I've loved it. It's a new introduction in 2020, not just talking about new aero changes or new shocks. That Armorall white Viking helmet is one of the most fun things I've seen brought into supercars, mate. And you seem to be absolutely having a ball with it. I mean, what is it about the Viking helmet that you just love getting it on your noggin and then just having a bit of a clown about?
Well, it could be anything. I'm so pumped after getting a pole, you know. Poles are hard to come by these days. So anyone you get, you're pretty pumped about. And hey, marketing people trying to mix it up, you know, you got to respect that. Armorall have been around for a long time, and they're just trying to mix it up. So, yeah, throw the cap on, get excited, get the crew around, and enjoy that. Hey, we all went out there, and there's only one person that can be, the only one team that can be quicker. So, certainly enjoy the moment.
Before the season's done, can you try to get one of those on SVG?
He said absolutely no way he's wearing that helmet, but I'll work on it. I'll get him in it before the end of the year for sure.
Well, we'll do our absolute best. But J-Dub, been an absolute pleasure, mate. We really look forward to seeing your 500 race, and here's to 500 more. Even if it's on the other side of the fence, we'd love to see it still be a big part of supercars for many, many years to come, mate. But all the best, and enjoy this little break that you have before we hopefully get back racing.
Yeah, will do. Thanks for chatting. Enjoy this E-Series coming up. I will be bringing up the rear. Don't worry about that. But enjoy that. And then, let's get the cars back and track as quick as we can.
Maybe we can get you a Super Nintendo controller or something rather than the new fancy pants ones.
I think that's the last time I played a video game. This is Super Nintendo. So I'm in a bit of strife. But anyway, there we go.
Thanks, J-Dub.
Cheers.
Jamie Wincup was our feature interview. Thanks to IMR Insurance, the tradies, mate. Call 13-IMR or visit imr.com.au. This is the driver's seat across Australia for Kubota. Together, we're building Australia.
This is the driver's seat for Kubota. Together, we're building Australia.
Welcome back to the driver's seat. We do it thanks to Kubota, building Australia. Right now, since we might have a bit of a lull and a hiatus in the world of motorsport, but that doesn't mean we can't have a look at the podium.
Now on the driver's seat, the podium.
We do it thanks to Bendix Brakes. And if you want cleaner wheels, fit Bendix Brakes. You know what? If they did do races in this current world climate, you'd have to have a bigger podium with 1.5 metres in between P1, P2 and P3.
How wide it'd be. They'd be spraying hand sanitizer.
That's actually very funny, Steve. Well done. But we thought we'd have a look-see at some dominant defending champions. And we'll start off with Mark Scaife in 2002. Now, Stevie, you'd probably have some rather horrible memories when it comes to Mark Scaife in the early 2000s.
Yes, he was. Like, he was definitely, you know, and I've said this before, and this is no disrespect to Mark Scaife, but he was not a very natural driver. And what I mean by that is that he couldn't not drive and come and jump in the car and be quick. He was probably one of the hardest workers in behind the scenes, and he worked and he was in cars and he was working on his technique and he's flat out to be as good as what he was. And, you know, I think, you know, for me to, and for any young kids to understand what you need to do and what you need to sacrifice, he was one of the blokes that I guess that's what I really admired about him.
Super analytical.
Super analytical. He wasn't the most, it's like a natural footballer. You know, sometimes they're not quite as natural as, you know, maybe a Cameron Smith or whatever it might be, but they work so hard on what they need to do, and all of a sudden, you know, things just click and they're there, you know, and that's what Mark was. Yep. And he business-wise, you know, his decision-making and where he needed to be to get the success, that's another trick of where you foresee you need to go. And, you know, he did that well. And that's why, you know, there's a lot of reasons on and off the track why he was so successful.
And they were powerful days back then. I mean, the HRT, the Holden Racing Team, they were the Red Barons, I think they were called, the Dark Side or the Empire or something like that. They were seriously, seriously good. And we know that Mark's a polarizing character. Some people don't like him. A lot of people do love him. But in those days, with that team, that engineering prowess, HSV was flying, the Holden dealer team. I mean, it was big, and they had a lot of history behind them. So you look at those cars. I think one of the cars he actually had, it might have been the 2001 car that he had. They call that the Golden Child, because I think it won everything at that point. It must have been something to race against him, though. I mean, so he was analytical in how he set the car up and he worked hard, but how was he from a racecraft point of view? Was a dirty driver? Like they say, Craig Lowndes loves to just tap on your ear bar just to let you know there, and he's intimidating. Was Mark like that as well on the track, or was he more, well, if you got him, he realised he was a shot duck and he got out of your way?
Yeah, I don't think he was that intimidating as such, but I think as the years went on, what was intimidating was that you've got this, you know, three-time, four-time champion behind you. So it's sort of what the past is and the achievements, the stature,
yes,
okay, rather than what they're doing on the track,
right,
you know.
Okay.
And I think that's more so for me what it was about, and just to realise that, you know, by then, 2002, when you know, this is sort of what we were talking about here generally, that was, you know, my third full year. You know, was into my third season of supercars. So I'd done 2000 was my first full-time year. And, I'd always kicked around with those guys too as a kid at the track. So then you're on the track full-time racing them. It's just, it's one of those experiences that you've just got to, you've almost got to shut out and just go, just another car on the track and just race it as you see it.
If you want to know just how dominating Scafie was in 2002, first off, this is the third title that he won in a row, but he had 15 race wins out of 29 races. That includes Bathurst with Jim Richards as well, which completed back-to-back championship and Bathurst doubles. That's how dominant Mark Scafie was.
And that's more than a 50% race win ratio there.
Yeah, exactly.
For the
not
year.
Bad. Not bad.
Not what
was
bad
Scotty,
at all.
What was Scotty last year? I can't actually remember if it was that many. He was 18 race wins. 18 but, right. I mean, the races are different now because there's like 4 billion races a year with three in a weekend or whatever. So,
Speaking of, let's have a look. Just 2 years later, though, Marcus Ambrose in 2004, he won his second championship for Stone Brothers Racing with the BA Falcon, 11 out of 26 races. Obviously, Marcus Ambrose had a very successful career in NASCAR as well. But this was sort of, we as you just said, Stevie, HRT and Holden were absolutely flying. So with Marcus going back-to-back in 03 and 04, and then in 05 having Russell Ingall win in a Ford BA Falcon as well, that was sort of maybe a bit of justice for Ford fans, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was. It was huge, wasn't it? I mean, that whole era, wasn't that, you know, with what happened back then, you know, we only just spoke to Matt Stone about that and about this particular car, to be honest. So to have, you know, another car, same again, winning that many races. What was it, 11?
Yeah, 11 out of 26. And that I think that included, it also, he swept Adelaide and also did Sydney as well and was just unstoppable.
I think he was unstoppable by memory at Phillip Island as well. Mm. Like that, he was always ridiculously fast at Phillip Island, Marcus was, for whatever reason. So, I mean, he was ridiculously fast everywhere, but that was one of those ones. Like Scotty Mack, he goes to Phillip Island, not the supercars are going there this year.
Yeah.
But he just clicks with that. He loves that style of track, and you just can't get near him.
In 2005, though, Ambrose was on track to win three in a row until round 10 at Bathurst, where he and Greg Murphy had, should we call it a disagreement?
A discussion.
Balaclava gate.
Yeah.
Was that the same year, Balaclava gate?
Yeah,
when,
it was.
Yeah, when he was sort of running where he probably shouldn't have been running because he wasn't wearing a balaclava, and then they had to restart and going up the hill.
Well, it was Greg Murphy's team that dobbed Stone Brothers in, and that's when he had to come in and fit his balaclava.
Yeah.
Warren Luff, who was driving with Russell.
Was it Russell?
I think he was driving with Russell. He had to come in.
Yeah.
No, he was driving with Marcus.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. He had to come in, get out of the car, and just bolt straight to the trailer.
Yeah, yeah.
basically they had a balaclava in the trailer that was already soaked in water for him to pretend as the scrutineers are running after him.
Yeah.
He'd taken his helmet and everything off and handed him over this cold, wet balaclava when it should have been very nice and warm.
So but you're anyway. Saying there was a little angst between Kmart Racing and Pertec Racing at that stage. Come up to the cutting, got into each other. Marcus had already announced, I think, that he was going to NASCAR by that stage, and Greg just got out of the car and went off.
I think it was both of them on track, really. It's where it started. And
yeah.
None wanted to give each other room through the... There was a restart late in the race coming up to the cutting, and one was slightly on the inside and the other one wasn't.
You can't go too wide.
No, you can't go too wide through there. So they had their big blow up. And the funny thing is, you know, that nearly blocked the track, remember?
It did, absolutely.
And that car of Marcus's was very heavily damaged. Couldn't even get it back to the pits.
No.
So the really funny thing was, I think Greg was so much liking and wanting and focusing on getting out of the car to have an argument with Marcus that he finished the argument, he got in the medical car and off he went. And by all means, at the end of the race, the team started his car up and drove it back to their pit garage with nothing wrong with it, apart from a few dings and bashes in the doors and that from the rattling up there. So
it was a great end. It was a great end to his supercars career and a couple of years of domination there. And it was a great looking car too.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Last but not least, on the podium, 1989. Dick Johnson. Now DJ here, he'd already won three championships between 1981 and 1984. 1988, he went and added to his list. And in 1989, I'll tell you what, that Ford Sierra and Dick Johnson, and even JB as well, just absolutely carved up the championship. Was it like, which race do you want? Should I go, no, JB, how would you like this one? Because you could not split those Ford Sierras in 1989. But yeah, DJ absolutely dominated and comfortably won Bathurst as well.
Yeah, won led every lap.
Mm-hmm.
It was, I think, one of those races that it could have been the one that got away because they had a turbo issue late in the race where they had no boost, and it had actually thrown off quite a few of the fins on the turbine wheel. So that was just lucky that those fins went down and out the exhaust rather than in the engine.
Yeah, right.
And, they went through the engine and got spat out with no damage. But that car, they were dominant. They, after 1987, when the Eggenberger Sierras came over and absolutely tailed everyone up, yes, they were illegal. They got found to be illegal at the
fuel.
End.
Mm-hmm.
Legal fuel, legal front track.
Yep.
Dad, and I'm pretty sure it was 88 or 89 that he went back. It was 89. It was that year that he went over to Silverstone and into, it was like an invitational at the end of the year.
Mm-hmm.
And absolutely smoked him. He didn't win the race because the thing, I think it did something with regard to, like, it overheated, like the...
Yeah, something mechanical fault.
Some mechanical fault late in the race where the radiator cap had failed and it spat all its water out or something, but... he qualified on pole. He was 1.6 seconds faster than the Eggenberger cars on P2 and 3. And he led the race by like two-thirds of a lap, not even halfway into the race, before him and John had to retire.
It's a big year.
It was huge. It was massive.
That was a big year. He could wheel a Sierra, and he could make the most out of out of those cars? I mean, without the turbo on them, what did they push? 90 horsepower on the dyno?
Yeah, 90 flat horsepower,
out?
Flat out.
And then once you bolted on the hairdryer, what did they come up to?
What did Dad say? He said it was chuck on the turbo, 2.4 bar of boost, and it's got 660 horsepower.
but they weren't nice to drive, were they?
No.
They were hot. They looked, if you look at the in-car vision, they looked horrible to drive. They were like light switches. 90 horsepower up until the boost came up, and then when the boost came on, bang, it was all 600 horsepower right there.
Through a tyre that's narrower than what they currently use on supercars. So through a 10-inch wide rear tyre, that's all they had. So, yeah, it was. And like as Dad said, he says they were actually pretty good to drive. You know, and he says that, but. Yeah,
they're pretty.
Yeah, exactly. They're pretty good to drive in the dry when the tyres were good.
Yeah.
When the tyres were a little bit old, they were pretty hard. And he says in the wet, they were just an absolute nightmare. He says normally there's a boost knob in the car, and Dad's hopeless. Like if the engine guy says, "Dick, do not go past number 5 on the boost knob," you know, Dad'll screw it around to 10 and keep trying to turn it. That's what he does. He's hopeless, right? He is hopeless. But he says in the wet, you can't get it back far enough the other way just to try to actually get some drivability into it. Yeah.
Wow.
So it's very cool, very cool. And, I love those days. And
is he building one at the moment?
Yeah.
We're building one together?
We're going to build one. We're going to build two, actually, and make one a ride car and restore one back to basically original. And have it as a, it's going to be a bit of a collector's piece, to be fair. So,
nice.
Yeah, so that's going to be very cool.
And it was kind of cool to see, too, at Sandown a couple of years ago, the Falcons in the old Sierra shell, that sort of blood red colour to it. It looked really, really cool. But those were three dominant defending champions on the podium. You can put your foot down with confidence thanks to Bendix Brakes, Australian technology for all weather confident braking. You're listening to The Driver's Seat. We do it thanks to Kubota. Together, we're building Australia.
This is The Driver's Seat for Kubota. Together, we are building Australia.
Yeah, welcome back to The Driver's Seat. We do it thanks to Kubota. For over 40 years, we've been making tomorrow matter, and together we're building Australia. Right now, we thought we'd delve into the archives and give you a Bendix Brakes classic big moment.
Now on The Driver's Seat, another Bendix Brakes big moment.
Bendix.
Australian technology for all-weather confident braking.
Yeah, if you want cleaner wheels, fit Bendix Brakes. Now, gentlemen, I'll play you the audio, and let's see what memories they bring back.
This is the story, and that's Jamie Wincup passing the Lexus RCF safety car with the lights flashing. Can't see any green light, can't see any other additional signals. Jamie's obviously said that he felt that there was a green light or something that gave him the indication that he could go by. Frank Adamson from V8 Supercar has been in contact with race control at race control. The clerk, of course, the race director and all of the observers up there in consultation with the safety car said, no, we're happy that, in our opinion, it's a breach.
Jamie Wincup and safety cars. It all began here, didn't it?
It was one of those things where, as a spectator and occasional racer, you looked out and you went, hang on, what, did that just happen? Really? Did that just happen? And boy, did it have a profound effect on the race. And now Jamie does have this reputation of passing. Like, didn't he do it again?
He did it at
Townsville, didn't he? New Zealand.
Yeah.
He did it in Pukekohe in New Zealand. And again, you kind of look at it and go, Jamie, what are you doing, mate?
Can you imagine the sponsorship he could get if he was – he is smart. And I am sure that as a professional race driver and a bit of pride, would not want to approach Specsavers as a sponsor, but it could be perfect. Could it be perfect?
Specsavers, absolutely, yeah. And it's a hard one, Lindsay, because it's when you're in the moment, when you're in the car, when you there's a million things going on, and you think you got a sniff of something, and he just didn't. We've all, I would say, in our lifetimes as drivers, perhaps made a boo-boo at the lights. We may have run a red light or done something like that. But that was, of course, you wouldn't have done that. But that was the running of the lights, the worst running of the lights I have ever seen, especially when you think of how much effort goes into a Bathurst and just one rush of blood, and it was, see ya, mate.
Now, sorry, go, Steve.
I was just going to say, it's like you just getting your dream job that you've been wanting for your whole life, and you're running late the first day, you fire through a red light, you get done for it, mm-hmm. and you're late to your job, license. And you lose your major job. You know, that's what it's like. You build up to it all year, and you cannot make those mistakes, and it just shows that every piece of the jigsaw in a race team needs to be spot on to win those races. You know, one little fault, whether it be the driver, whether it be the wheel guy, whether it be the strategist, whether it be the mechanic, you know, it doesn't matter who it is. If they don't do their job perfectly in those races and something goes wrong, that's the end of their day.
With this race in particular too, because obviously that's the thing that stands out in Jamie's run there, but he also ignored team order because he was told to pit in this race, wasn't he?
Yeah, he was. Yeah, and I can't imagine what Dutto and the guys in the pit bunker were thinking when he just fires on past. And he did that to avoid a double stack with Lowndes because Lowndes had come in. And Jamie knew that was going to hurt him, as a double stack always does. And so he just fired on through. And then so they're all shaking their heads about what's he just done here. And then he goes up mountain straight. And at turn two, he goes on approach to turn two, he goes around the safety cars. And I think he went from like second to 19th or 20th after that. It was a shocker. He got a pit lane penalty and it just ruined his race. And how do you then go into the boss? Like, we know Roland Dane, pretty straight shooter.
Yeah.
Could you imagine?
Oh, he's definitely in the crosshairs. It's not like Roland's going to go, oh, that's all right, Jamie, don't worry about that.
And you just know it. And you're in the car and you're doing lap after lap after lap and you think, I am in for the world's biggest kicking when I get out of the car here. I am going to cop it hard.
But he knows that feeling well because
he did it with the
fuel. He's done it with that many things. Yeah. It's just like, what?
And if he was not a 7-times champ, it would have been, see you, mate.
Mm. 100%.
Not a fun day at the office there for J-Dub. That wraps up our Bendix Brakes classic big moment. Put your foot down with confidence. Bendix Brakes, Australian technology for all-weather confident braking. And that wraps up another edition of The Driver's Seat. Remember, you can rev up your smartphone with The Driver's Seat app. It's available now in the App Store and catch up on the full archive of all of our interviews and even a couple of bonus ones as well. But until next week, we'll see you then.